How about yourself?
I'd like to do it.
Good. And those of you who want to stay, just stay. Just take off. For those of you who can take off. Understanding signs.
Oh.
Sorry, I'm mumbling. I'm not going deaf. And I took physics from him when I was a wee. And I remember the first class he came into was right after somebody had taught a chemistry class. And there was a student up on the blackboard trying to figure out something with the professor to let him get me. So he got discouraged and the professor was sorry he couldn't help him. The professor left and keep kind of stood dazed for a second. So Bernowski, the little guy with a huge head, pops up to him and says, "Wait a second." And he writes and says, "Do you understand this?" The guy suggests. "Do you understand this?" The guy suggests. He says, "They work together." He says, "Really?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "One's an outgrowth of the other." Yeah, that was it. And it wasn't anything that the kid didn't understand. It's just that Bernowski understood what he was doing well enough that it could be clear enough to convey it. See, there is no such thing like that in social sciences. You can't fly Gandhi in here, you can't fly Dolce in here. You see, we don't have that same kind of thing in terms of social sciences. Because the doing of it is a phenomenon itself. It's like a gymnast coming here and trying to say to you how to do the it. Well, you've got to be able to do the it. You can't understand how to do the it. Now, you could be a good physical therapist and help somebody align themselves physically. But they got to participate. So there are some differences between science and social sciences and what we do. There are ways of learning from what Colombe has been through without feeling trapped by it.
When do you get to lose your cane? Are you pardon? When do you lose your cane?
When do you lose your cane?
When do you no longer have to use the cane?
Ah! I don't know.
If you make sure you'll
physical therapy was a big breakthrough about 15 years ago. The physical therapist recognized that if they always paid attention to the side of the body that was injured, that the person would sustain limp over a longer period of time, and working equally on the other part of the body as well. Now the Greeks understood that with those temples they had and the healing areas and so on, they understood holism, and they coined the word holism. They dealt with sweats, they dealt with electricity to help healing. And so when someone thinks of this as kind of the radical health movement. You think about the pre-Socratics doing the same stuff generations ago. In England, it's just been discovered that if you put saline solution wrapped around a wound and put electricity on either side of it, that the wound heals much more rapidly. Well, Tibetans have been doing that for generations. They simply generate energy. The same kind of electromagnetic force field is just generated. They would just sit with the saliva on the wound, that saline solution, and just generate it. So now we got this new Western science understanding that electricity helps electrical mechanical probably a lot. So we tried an experiment. Some people felt that essentially we would not lose no people. Did we lose anybody?
No.
Awesome. Right, so what's the attitude in terms of the experiment? Are you actually interested in how the experiment went? Is it actually interesting to you, or is it just simply something you perform?
The point is more in dealing with the things and discussing how it went after.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was interested in what happened when I did it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How about yourself?
I was interested, I think, in what happened when I dealt with the people, and how I felt what I was doing with people.
How about yourself?
I thought it was definitely worth doing, and it's interesting to see how when one does have to explain what one's doing, make one think about it, and maybe you think about it more. And it also, I think, generally the response I got with folks that I talked with, and I'm not sure this is representative or not, but for me it was positive, and I had the ability to communicate and get good feedback from them about some of the things that I was concerned about what we were talking about.
Mm-hmm. How about yourself?
Well, I kind of wasn't into it at first.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of went out there wrong, maybe. Then I ended up in the same room with three other experimenters and some subjects. So I sort of became a subject.
How about yourself? How are you doing
it? I thought it was quite interesting, and I think the fun part is the chairing part. It was a really good one. Or,
how about yourself?
I was really nervous, and I could hear it in my voice and everything, even though I was talking to somebody who was here the last time you were here. I knew would have wanted to be here if they hadn't had other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still like, And I found it was impossible for me to approach it without it being an explicit question. I couldn't say, I'm just telling you this, because there's not...
Next question.
I don't know if that's the way I want to put it, but it's not a usual social interaction to go up to somebody and tell them something about what you're doing. You're imposing yourself on their time with something. The implicit expectation is that, okay, what does this have to do with me? What do you want out of me?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't but see it otherwise, and I in fact had to ask. I don't know if I had to, but I did ask, well, you know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You could have said, do you mind if I stay here and bullshit with you? That's a terrible group on that. You could have said a variety of things. That's when you chose.
The person that I ran into the coffee the first time was someone who I don't usually have any interaction with other than to get something from or give something to or something non-personal, and so that I felt a little, wasn't the context I was familiar with. I'm familiar with saying to people, this is what I'm doing, and hoping they find it interesting or whatever. But with this person, I wasn't, and so I was very self-conscious, and it wasn't really a pleasant process. The second time, it was more fun.
I liked it because it was a different kind of thing to do from what I almost always do. And so I tried to, it kind of woke me up. I often find myself sort of slipping into these standardized modes in interaction. This was a whole different kind of mode, whole different kind of purpose to it, that was really not that familiar, just to sort of be spontaneous. And, without any true goal, I just wanted just to try a level of communication or a mode of interaction. And I just wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I went around, just kind of like saw what seemed that I needed to do. Without trying to plow through anything, just to be able to accomplish this or that. Just kind of mixing around.
Mm-hmm.
I went out a little bit nervous that I was going to sound stupid. I don't know why. But I guess basically that I'm not, even though we weren't supposed to be able to proselytize, I'm not used to discussing with the first person I meet, for example, why I find something interesting and good when it's more ethereal, say, than food or amoebas or something like that. Once I start talking about it, though, I felt the same thing that Kim did, which is that it started to make some things clear in my mind about why was I here, and why had I decided to sit down instead of here. And it also brought, for me, a fundamental question up, that I didn't know why various people in the house wanted to live here. I think by this time in the year, most of the people that are here because they want to be, and I wanted to know why they wanted to be here. What was it about calling me at the time?
My sense is that there's more obvious communion between the people in the group since you all did this together. My sense is kind of around from here on, people started getting a little draggy because people were repeating themselves. They were repeating what other people said. So my feeling was that the group might never change once people got bored, they weren't excited anymore. Let's just assume I'm right for a moment. For the hell of it. That's one of the social diseases we embody as Stanford University people. is that as long as we primarily listen to our intellect, we continually be enticed. Most people in the world don't have that as a burden, and therefore they can be productive in a different way than we have. If each person had to say something different than the last person to keep us interested, then after a while, either you figure out new ways to say the same shit, or you start to get bored. Now that, to my way of feeling, is a social disease. If you haven't,
it becomes a problem when writing
printed. That's right. Remember when I was teaching at Stanford, I would ask people if they would be willing to have somebody else that they didn't get along with read their paper. And I'd ask them, would they rather have somebody who they liked read their paper? I wanted somebody to read it before I had to. Because I figured if that person knew that, there's a good chance they'd do a cleaner job with it. And it was their choice who they got to do it with. Only some, there is a sense that it's not just a ritual. You know, and the nice thing about students, you know, why I continually taught classes here that were only peers, is that it's really hard to bullshit people who just like you in a certain way. Either you get on to learn things with each other, or you kind of look at it and say, oh, watch Dave do this number again. God damn, he did the same thing two terms ago in his English class. That same shit. You see, now the beauty of that is that if they share that, assume that for Dave it wasn't shit. Assume for Dave that's the best thing he knows how to do, and he got caught in some fashion. Maybe you give him a hand, so that's where the collective aspect comes from. Do you think it was worth, do people generally have a feeling it was worth our time, the 5 or 10 minutes? You didn't have any idea. You just had to return the bike and decided to drop in.
Yeah, well, I knew you were talking, and I just got done from cleaning for surgery. Thought it would be a great tonight for studying. Quite honestly.
And that, see, that what's enjoyable about that is that it's simply an articulation of a perception. Not a lot of thinking going on there. She simply opened her mouth and articulated what was going on. That's a very rare thing at Stanford University. It indicates your willingness to have a lot of exposure, and I appreciate that. And it makes things a lot easier. You see, we often confuse the difference between opening our mouths to do a whole lot of stuff and just opening our mouths sometimes to articulate, period. Without outside context, without really knowing what we're doing, just letting it out, see what happens. We appreciate that. But we make a worthwhile diversion for a while. It's all right, too. What drew you here? You had no good food, you had no good...
Just waiting to do something. Expecting someone, and so... Seems to be just sit down.
How about yourself?
There they were.
That's good. All right, let me go on with some other things now, if I can. Is there some common feeling that the experimenting with community has some significance in the lives of the people who are sitting here? That being part of the community is something that you actually find significant in your own personal lives?
Yeah.
My interest is to find out if there is one thing you could do for yourselves that would enhance your ability to experiment with community. What is it that you would do? A singular thing. Let's say you had a wish list, but the wish list could be a singular thing. What would you do? Find one specific thing that would enhance your ability to participate in the community. Enhance it.
That would happen,
but we don't know that.
Well, if you have people in shifting rooms, then you just shift beds. You don't have this.
Yeah, you should.
In the co-ed dormitories, people are changing beds all the time. Just think of it in a different context. I mean, it goes on all the time. You just want to raise the consciousness of it, in the sense of why it's being done, how to do it. Doesn't mean we'll get it done, but that's a very specific thing that has an interest to you. Other things. Get to choose.
Being able to be understood.
By the internal community.
By the community within the house.
Good. Clear? Everyone understand that?
She's on her way.
What?
I said, you're well on your way. You understand?
Oh, okay.
So what happens is the group will develop a dynamic. We already are starting. So I want, as you talk, to be aware you might be getting some of what you want. Right now. Not just you, not just Dave, but other people. Start to assume that you might start to get some nurturement. Right now. Today. Now. Okay. Other people. One thing.
I just thought of something.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I wouldn't have thought that I would have thought of it, but to be in an ongoing sort of enthusiastic meditation group, you know, about like 8 people who always just love to meet and do some kind of meditation,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, like once a week, something like that. I think that would like really, it would be added, real added dimension of improving the sort of wealth of the.
Good. I'm very happy if you got no idea why the hell you're saying what you're going to say. I don't think you got to know why. This is a thing you get to wish for. Period. You don't have to have outside perspective right now. Other people.
Well, in my case, I'm an eating associate, so I don't live here. And I would like to be part of a living community. Where I'm living now is a house that the guy owns and is renting out some rooms upstairs. And so there's a weak sense of community there amongst the people, but so he chose the folks that are there, and we didn't choose each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I miss in my life. And I've lived in that situation before, but when I was in Aspen this year,
mm-hmm.
I do have a situation in Palo Alto. I couldn't find myself looking for it. I'm not sure, I could have applied to live in Columbia, and I didn't do that, because I don't think that I could live with as many people
mm-hmm.
in one room as I would have to do to live here.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, you've hit some kind of common understanding.
Well, I haven't tried it, so maybe I would have.
No, you see, I didn't say that anyone agreed with you. I said that people understood you. See, that we have some difficulty with our language tonight, with people implying that I mean one thing. So I'm trying to do this somewhat self-consciously, so at least you see my approach, which is a lot of information is given to people if mostly you just sit and listen. Amazing the amount that we expose who we are to each other by simply listening as carefully as we can. Assuming we miss all kinds of shit too. You know, but we can get quite a bit. So I think you were understood well by people. Other senses? Yeah.
Just less shyness and tell them what's really going on.
Mm-hmm. What do you think shyness defends? Good, so it's not necessarily for you that it defends something, it does something, it gives you security. So shyness gives you something. Keep playing with it.
Yeah.
It gives you something.
Mm-hmm.
You're able to hide behind something. It gives you security. So the antidote for that is your ability to be either less secure or have less hiding space. Just using your terms.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair, is that? So what do you think that matter of hiding does for you? Be descriptive, don't be analytic, just describe. Your choice is very specific. You'd be happy with having less shyness in there. Think living with 37 other people could do that?
Yeah.
So part of it, not all of it, but part of it may simply be the social phenomena you're in. So when we first dealt with the whole question of co-ed bathrooms, I may have told you this, that resolved through my seminars where I had people paint themselves because they got so tired of all that talking. And when the people finished painting themselves, they figured they had to wash off. And they all went in the shower and washed off and discovered that they just had co-ed bathrooms. After hours of house meetings about it, it happened just one afternoon. But one people were all concerned about was all sexual overtones, that people were going to watch each other piss and crap and do other things that were going to get turned on. Now, obviously, those of you who have colored bathrooms realize that's not the greatest place to get turned on. But what really happened was, which was became revealed, is that a lot of people found the loss of privacy. It just wasn't that there was a man in the bathroom and you were in the bathroom with a woman, but that you had learned to essentially block out people of your own sex in the bathroom. So you could still feel some sense of privacy in the bathroom. And what the other sex had to do was it broke the norm of the blocking out process. And eventually it became that men and women annoyed each other. And they said, you see, once you no longer were blind having a guy in the bathroom we didn't pay any attention to, it was just a guy, it felt private. Once you didn't know if it was going to be a guy or a girl coming in, at that point, then everyone had an effect on you, and then there was this general sense of loss of privacy in the bathroom. So the idea of the shyness, the reason I got into it a little bit with you is it's a very complex matter for a community to figure out about what it means to have private space and family space and so on. And sometimes some of the propensities we have are good mechanisms, defense mechanisms, but if we don't know what the hell we're defending ourselves against, then we can't find better answers for them. Am I making myself clear to you? Other things on your wish list?
I think a lot of times the size of the community
like to be able to experiment more with the smaller number of individuals.
Well, at least to start with, that's good. For people who are not used to sharing things and be responsible for other people, it's got easier to feel like you're important too, since it's smaller and you can't just get away with doing your job.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes some people have to be forced to feel like
it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Are there examples on the wish list?
I wish that I had some enthusiasm for something I could share with the people in this house. I've got a lot of enthusiasm, but right now it's focused on things outside of this house. And I wish that I could get...
Good, like, what's an example of what you're enthusiastic about?
Right now, I'm really enthusiastic about some research I'm doing in the business house. And I just... I think it would be hard for me to bring that enthusiasm to this house. But I wish I could either latch on to someone else's enthusiasm for some project or...
Is it your feeling most people don't know anything about physics in the past?
Well, I know that there's a couple of physics or physics people doing that.
Go to Synergy, like the whole
thing. I'm actually thinking the reverse of that. My sense is that if a number of people don't know their ass from holding down physics, then maybe somebody making some sense to them about physics would be very interesting to them. So they wouldn't understand you. But they might be truly intrigued with someone being able to give them a peek at what that world of physics is like. I'm just trying to give you a suggestion. I suspect that many people in Colombia are just as happy to know what they don't already know.
Mm-hmm. So, like, the synergy we're planning on having, like, after the study breaks, little discussion sessions for anyone who has any idea, like, the research on just that's a new great thing. Everyone can, like, just share them and just have a general discussion. Just the people that are interested. It sounds like it's going to be really great. There's just a lot of interesting people there.
Mm-hmm. Sounds very helpful.
That's one thing that actually is kind of, it's quite reasonable to bring somebody in from the outside, but no one here would generally assert that they have something to offer and schedule themselves to talk about something.
But so it's not an official schedule, it's kind of unofficial. Well, I guess I'll go and I might just bring up my idea about this poem that I just read.
Mm-hmm. Other folks?
I don't know if I have a manual about people, how things that people put around names. I mean, there's a lot more that people go on with. small scale, like wood work or something like that. So, I think you see it when some people, when they're in the kitchen, their meals they prepare, it takes a lot of chopping about it. Mm-hmm. Or making bread every night, that's kind of something that they're more looking
So you decide that every term a third of the dishes would be given away, and less people made dishes or pots, eventually there'd be nothing here. Or all the utensils would be thrown away unless you could, I mean, there are various ways you could play with that.
Yeah.
You know, all, you could, at the beginning of the term, have an agreement, but all the handles, well, all the doors would be taken off. And during the term, everyone has to put the handles back on. It's not a, why we decided to grind the grain, some of you have heard the story before, in order to make the bread, was that we wanted the actual physical event of grinding. We didn't think it was any hipper. The good stone ground, whole wheat flour, and be just as hip. We wanted the action. We wanted something that you couldn't speed through particularly fast in order to do it. So your notion of wanting to have some kind of physicality regularly could be presented in various ways. You could figure out how to do that.
For a while to a vegetable slicer in the kitchen, and it sometimes doesn't get brought up very explicitly, but I know speaking for myself, probably for some other people as well, and there are a lot of people who would hate to see the kitchen become that mechanized.
It's not like a third world country who are worrying about trying to introduce mechanization and changing the culture. In this case, we're doing the reverse. We're in fact not having mechanization is such an unusual event. It's like a complete reversal of that. The culture's got all the reinforcement in the world for that mechanization. So the thing that changes the culture is not the mechanization. The thing that changes the culture is not having the mechanization. So you'd be like a Hopi tribe not voting upon having electricity come into the village. It'd be like us agreeing to get rid of electricity. That's why you see any group of people who are seriously interested in liberation have to have very little in common to have a great deal in common. You could sit and talk to the Hopi about that very issue right now, coming from diametrically opposed places and understand each other. The Hopi would understand exactly what you mean. You see? Completely different worlds. That's why what appears to be so much differences of people around the world, as long as there's some sense of trying to develop some kind of liberation notion, there's a great deal in common. Does that make sense to you? Other kind of wish lists.
I think that's just maybe mm-hmm. reading associates. I don't. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of people that are in the house all the time. They're just totally strangers to me. I'd rather not be totally strangers to so many people who are always there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know some of them, but a lot of them just are doing that.
That's quite a list. Does any of those things on the list seem unobtainable?
One of the wishes I have is that we might be able to have a much stronger sense of community, be able to have a strong self-determination by the house not being owned by the university, and have somebody over us telling us that we can't be in this trouble. And if you do it, why you have to change it? Because it's open to you.
Have
a
whole
way. I thought a lot about that. And buying a house doesn't seem like a very easy thing to do. Renting a house doesn't sound like an invention.
Yeah, well,
you know,
let me just get the facts. Now the university tells Golden Bay you can't paint the rooms?
not moving that way.
That's right.
Who's going to take it over next?
They have a policy. Not everybody's doing it.
Right, but if Golden Bay is going to, the residents of Golden Bay will continue this, why is that applicable to the house until there's no longer a house?
In fact, we paint our walls and every year we have to just go to the office that we really want to keep our mural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They enjoy acceptance.
I'm going to decide to do it with a park last time.
Do they house people here in the summer? I know they do a lot of places in the
summer. They have programs here in the summer that bring in a fair amount of income for the university.
Yeah, they use Palm Bay for that.
They use Palm Bay for that.
It's really a scam because the people that bring here are like teenagers, so I'm sure just love it if rooms are painted psychedelic. Or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Well, and the energy bill is fixed too, right? You pay a fixed rate. Yeah. And there would have been a lot more signs of cooperative effort to lower the bill or save energy and all that, just for self-interest.
As you know, Colombia started by renting a house as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how that changed?
Yeah, the university didn't let that happen anymore. And the students at that time, I think it was 4 or 5 years, maybe 3 or 4 years after we started. At that point, it wasn't worth the students fighting for that. Because they had learned, again, from what we talked about earlier, they had lost the purposefulness of what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
It was to have a variable scale within the house itself, so that various people could participate in the community without having as much money as others.
Something I see is that, I mean, there was a time when there was, I think, probably enough political will in the house among the co-ops to have made some long-term structural changes, arrangements, but the opportunity was not grabbed, and it's like, so the university has been able to sort of take control of the concept of the place in some very fundamental ways, in a way that the people here just, there's no way they can gather enough sort of single-mindedness to notice that and to do anything about it.
The only strategy I know is what I spoke about at Synergy House last year, 2 years ago, was you have to simply forget your opposition and decide what you want to create and create it and then see what the relationship is between you and that opposition. That the scales are so little right now, that is the scale and magnitude that you're working on, that defining it in relationship to the opposition is just going to drive you crazy, because there's nothing that's done to you. It all feels like you're pissing in the corner. You gotta leave it all alone. And if it's a Synergy House or a Colombia that wants to be vibrant, understands some of its purposefulness, understands how it wants to bring people in, has some, you know, does all that stuff, then the administration has to kind of scurry to figure out what to do in relationship to it. And we talked a few years ago at Synergy, and there seemed to be a real drop in interest of what it meant to live out the possibility there was no Synergy. Not because the administration was being tiresome, which they were, but that wasn't really the problem. The problem was that Synergy itself had lost the vitality and purpose. And if that was paid attention to, then the other stuff would start to present itself naturally. You didn't have to worry about it too much. So again, I'll reemphasize what we talked about earlier, is that these communities, Synergy and Colombia, are clearly serious experiments, much more serious than most people give them attention. That they're extraordinarily worth people's time. They have long-term implications for individuals' lives, and they have very significant implications as an institution here at Stanford University, giving more and more people accessibility to be part of the community. It's only helpful if the community has some sense of purpose on its own. Otherwise, it just feels like a lot of traffic coming through. Why are all these eating issues? What's going on, man? So in some ways, some of these questions have to be prioritized, and the community has to then learn, given those priorities, which are the small portions you bite into. Now that can be pretty exciting, having a good discussion about all the shit that's going down, and which portion of the nibble the house is going to live with. Now one of the things the Quakers have to offer in terms of process, which I think is useful, is what's understood by consensus decision making. Consensus is, that everyone at the end of the decision is willing to live with the decision and actively participate in its execution. It doesn't mean that everyone agreed with the decision. They agreed once the decision was made what they would do to participate with it. So you could develop 3 or 4 priorities and then begin with those priorities to put them into practice. Even if one wouldn't have made that their priority, that you legitimize the process enough so that it can work. From my way of thinking and seeing things, that's a major problem within the culture at large, is what kind of processes do individuals agree to be participants in? And what are they willing to follow through on? Use the word responsibility, or the ability to be responsive. What are the kind of qualities you think you need to have wholeism, a whole responsive ability for something? Obviously, classes are not set up to make you responsible. They're set up to have you follow along on certain courses to do certain things. Those courses that are set up to give you some individual latitude to be able to have responsibility come forth are more, they're more dependent upon the student participation. So they've been cut back increasingly over the years. Those things that are more predictable, where somebody else is in charge, that is a professor often or a TA or whatever, are becoming more and more the norm. If you come into a group of people and say, we're going to have a social issue that nobody has the answer to. What are we going to do with defoliation in Nepal? What are we going to do with the gardens on Escondido Village? Whatever it is. And people say, well, who do we turn to for the answer? And the answer is there is nobody. It's got to be a group effort to identify the problem, figure out the methodology, and figure out what to do with it. Those kinds of abilities to be responsive, at Stanford are changing pretty rapidly. That can be a major part of what a community is. A community is to decide that one of its prime purposes is to work in antithesis to the system it finds itself in large. But the kinds of things that happen to you at Stanford, you assume is the context that you find yourselves in. And you figure out what you'd like to have in the house to keep you healthy in relationship to that. Especially if you can assume that the values at Stanford are the same as the values of the culture at large. So that the experiment is worth your time. Because the more masterful you are with that experiment, the more it transfers to the workplace when you leave Stanford, or to your home life, or to whatever. Now that would be something really solid for a community to think about. And then instead of getting overwhelmed with all the possibilities, to pick out a few that you'd be able to work with. Is this making sense to you? As much as possible, see what is as it is, and play with it. Play with it. Get a sense of how it works. Play with it even if your life depends upon it. Keep that attitude of playing with it at the same time. We've talked about this before at other talks I've given, certainly in Synergy. In terms of the martial arts, people have understood that the more relaxed you are in the martial arts, the more effective you are. It doesn't mean you're dumb and blind. That's not what relaxed means. Relaxed means relaxed. You can be insightful, you can know technique, you can have energy, you can have physical power, all that stuff you can have. We discovered a few years ago in the Olympics, during judo matches, that every individual who won held the other individuals at the beginning of the match with two fingers. All those people who used three fingers lost, because they were so refined and so much equality there that the number of neuromuscular activity that took place with the employment of the third finger made all the difference in the world. And we know when we watch these tennis players who at various times beat each other, or the Super Bowl or whatever, that a sport needs a certain kind of unity and timing. If the team doesn't catch it or the individual doesn't catch it, it looks like they're completely imbecilic out there, like nothing's going on. That there's some phenomena that simply don't work. If you relax into them and they work great, if they don't work. So I'm suggesting that having problems doesn't mean that you have to get tense over them, but it means that you want to reveal them as best you can and work with them. There's just a lot of generalizations. I was hoping not to do too many of those generalizations. I think the more important part is for you to perceive for Synergy and Colombo what might be a few principles that the individuals within the house is willing to make manifest. People seem to be very happy with the cooking in Colombia right now. Very pleased. Is that a general consensus?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Now maybe one of the things you can do is make that obvious. Maybe you ought to have every 10 days or every 2 weeks a gathering where you all thank each other for how well you're carrying along the cooking groups. Something that makes it explicit. There's nothing wrong with that kind of ritual. It helps. It recognizes something. And then say, now that that's working well, do we want to expand that? Do we want something else to work really well? Or do we want to kind of lay with that and do other things? The ways of kind of not feeling that you're demanding things of each other, but learning how to expand and grow with something that works well. It's a nice kind of momentum to play with what's working well and continue to grow and to expand. Some kind of common agreement amongst the house what those one or two things might be is the next step. Of course, cooking groups are working well. What's the next one? We talked about what it meant to start conveying to the campus at large something about community. And one of the easiest ways to do it, since cooking groups are working so well, is to use the mode of cooking, as we talked about earlier. Fruit salads and bread and cheeses and other things. Then conveying to the people in the community at large, you know, the dorms or whatever. This is part of what we do at Coleman Bay. It makes sense to us and we enjoy it. We want you to see it for what it is. If you have any questions, talk with us. Whatever, we're simply here to commune with you. That's what community is about, to have some kind of resonance with you, to be understood.
We want people to get some feel for what we're in part doing. If it interests you, come on, spend some time. If it doesn't, it's fine. And they could build on the success of the cooking booth. And maybe some sense of hope. But the most important thing of all this is how you can determine that Colum Bay is the kind of home you want for a period of time. Remember, when I was teaching Native Americans here at Stanford, we had a discussion one day about Roble. And one of the women got really pissed at everybody in the room. And all of a sudden, everyone in the room understood that she thought that Roble was her home. And they were intrigued by that. Because everybody else thought Roble was some dorm. You know, they knew where home was. Home was in Mexico or Arizona or Alaska. No one confused Roble with their home. This woman, who's a traditional Sioux, when she got to Roble, Roble was her home. And she was offended by certain things that were happening in her home. And the other students were trying to say to her, you know, that's crazy. This is white man's world. You just rent some room. She said, that's not the way I live. I don't rent rooms. You know, and it was an interesting kind of discussion to hear this back and forth talk about people who were worrying about her getting caught by the idea that she was really at home. And she trying to tell them that they were caught for not willing to live out their values even at Stanford. It was a very real discussion. So one of the more important things is to recognize that Colum Bay is your home. And what do you want in your home? You know, it's like any other home, you get your wish list and then you figure out which portions of it you can actually have. Make some sense? I guess one of the more important things, again, is to continue to remind you the social context you find yourselves in, living in Colum Bay. Stanford is a very powerful social system. It's no lightweight. There's nothing light you're doing. Same thing with synergy. You are taking on major experiments. Sometimes I think the only usefulness of fame, when I used to travel with Joan Baez and I'd watch all these people do this shit with her, you used to think, well, I don't know, that's not very interesting to me. And I realized the only real usefulness of it is that you wake people up. Somebody thinks you have something to say. See, and that's kind of helpful. The other thing that's helpful is that you have accessibility to certain things you don't know on other levels. The other is just generally a pain in the ass. But what's important is, I wish somebody who people in the house in their own worlds, you know, if you were involved in physics, and if you were involved in social sciences, or humanities, whatever it is, some heavy woman or man in your field just flew in here and said to you, nice going, this must be tough. I'm glad you guys are trying it, and then just split. Something that would shock people to recognize that the consequences of your actions have very significant results throughout. Stanford's a heavyweight, the culture you're dealing with is a heavyweight, your ability to learn certain things and transfer it when you leave school, your ability to sustain a community that has a history that other people can carry on with you. There's a lot of real stuff going on here. When I go to Nicaragua, they got no problem understanding me. None whatsoever. And the man who runs our project in Nicaragua, Fred Royce, lives in Colum Bay. He's one of the people who helped start the bridge. Guy used to make popcorn in the dorms during study break to talk to people about the war. And now he's in Nicaragua teaching diesel mechanics and agricultural mechanization and nutrition to people who were selected by their villages to come and learn. These are principles he learned while he was here. But he's a person who's a process person. He understood that if he could catch the flavor of a process, that over a long period of time it would begin to nurture him and he would learn something about it. So go out of your ways to reinforce each other. Go out of your ways to do that. Go out of your ways to help to figure out how to articulate. Go out of your ways to understand what you have in common with the people in the house and build upon those things. See, these are qualities that are worth your time. It's as significant, if not more significant, than any dating you can do. It's certainly a hell of a lot more significant than most of the courses you'll ever take. The other is you could have gatherings where you attempted to bring parents of people who lived in the house to the community once or twice a term. There's no reason why you can't be conventional like certain fraternities. You try to convey to the people who you're closest to what you're doing with your lives. There's lots of things you can do. You can have discussions about the social consequences, even if it's just Stanford University understood as your social context, of what the purpose is of having a community here. What does it mean for a gathering of people to still take the time to cook for themselves? Most people look at you and say, you know, Big deal, man. You cook for yourselves. But most human beings at Stanford University obviously don't. Do they? You still buy your own produce? Okay. Obviously, most people here don't do any of that. And there are a lot of things you do day by day that differ you. And they don't differ you because you're elites or because you're heavies. It differs you because of a choice you've made in the distribution of your time. You have increasing control over your life.